Yes, good low. Hello, and welcome to Demystifying Detection Dogs with MD Dogs. I'm the founder of MD Dogs, Libby Rockaway, and I'm here with my co-host, Maggie Kudla, owner of Sit, Stay, Lex.
Hi, I'm excited to jump in and discuss all things diabetic alert dog. Go ahead and grab a drink because we can talk about dogs for hours. Literally.
I love that. Okay, today we're going to be talking about the first three steps to scent training your diabetic alert dog. Step one is pairing the scent with a reward. Step two is sniffing the sample. And then step three is your alert behavior to the scent sample. So that could be your paw, your nose nudge, whatever that is. But first, we are going to actually talk about how to get to the samples and making sure that we're collecting our samples properly. Libby, I will have you start off with how you go through collecting your samples.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's lots of different ways that we've talked about collecting samples and that I've even tried. So in general, though, what we use, let's start off with ultra basic here, is we use saliva. And you can use sweat. You can use sweat and saliva. I personally like saliva because I think that there's less contamination concerns, just in terms of you don't have to worry about perfume and the last time somebody showered and whether they put deodorant on this morning and all those things. You have other contamination concerns like what you've eaten last, but it's a little bit different. And you also then get, I think, more basically liquid for the sample. So I think, at least to me, it seems like that would be a stronger odor to train with. And at least at the beginning, I want to make it super clear for the dogs.
Yeah.
So I've always used saliva. And just a couple times, I think I've combined it with sweat. But I didn't find any differences as far as accuracy.
Okay. Yeah. I've thought about it where it's the scent. I feel like the saliva makes the most sense, even from what I know about it. You know way more than me, but like I think a lot of the times the smell feels like it comes out more in the dogs from their mouth, being expelled.
Exactly, and you think about dogs who are natural alerters, you know, so people who are like, you know, my dog without any training responded. Pretty much every single time they say my dog gets in my face, like, and smells my breath and tries to stick its nose in my mouth.
Yeah.
And so I feel like if they're doing that naturally, that must be where the strongest odors is coming from. They're not saying, you know, oh, my dog is sniffing my ankles or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes sense to me. I don't know. It seems easy. It is also, like you were saying, with the contamination, like, it's just easier.
Yeah. It's easier to stick something in your mouth.
How long are you recommending people wait before they do the saliva sample?
After eating something? Yeah. So after you eat or drink something other than water, my recommendation is 30 minutes at least, just to make sure that you're not accidentally going to be imprinting the dog on Gatorade or
toothpaste
is a big one.
Gum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 30 minutes for that. And then as far as actually like what tools we use, you can use cotton is the best. And so I like the dental cotton. So like those dental rolls, they're really designed to absorb, liquid and actually designed to absorb saliva. And so you just pop one of those in your mouth, kind of swish around for a couple seconds. It's not super pleasant, but it's not awful.
It's better than cotton balls.
Yes. It's better than cotton balls.
Cotton balls. I have like a weird, I don't like things on my teeth. Like the thought of like biting a towel or something really upsets me. And so I don't know why, but the cotton balls was awful because I did that with pickles and I was like, there has to be something better.
Yes.
And the dental gauze, whatever.
The dental,
rolls.
Dental rolls.
Dental rolls are better.
Yeah. And then others that I used to use are 2x2 cotton gauze pads from like the pharmacy. Like you can get at Kroger.
Mm-hmm.
And so those, if somebody's like super eager to get started, sometimes I'll just suggest that they go to their local Walmart or Kroger or whatever and pick those up if they want to get started like today. Because the dental rolls you have to order on Amazon. But they're super cheap.
Yeah, no, I use the gauze that you're talking about with pickles.
Okay, yeah.
That was what, instead of the cotton balls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my first bunch of dogs, I used that.
Yeah.
And those work totally fine. And then once you have that saturated with saliva, then you put that into a container of some type. So if you use the 2x2 gauze, I tend to use the little pill baggies from, again, Kroger, Walmart, pharmacy, pick it up off the shelf. And then if you use the dental rolls, I have these little, they're polystyrene containers that are the same exact size. Mm-hmm. It's in the MD Dogs book, the exact size and where to get them. But also super cheap. You buy them in bulk. And you just, it has a little screw-on lid and you can dump them in. But yeah, that's about it as far as like actually collecting them. One thing that I will say is people like to, for some reason, come up with lots of other kind of items to use to collect samples. So most recently I saw somebody suggest paper towels and like putting paper towels in your mouth.
Interesting.
So I would not recommend that, for a lot of reasons, but one is you think of a paper towel roll and all the odors that that has been exposed to.
Yeah.
Because if it's a substance that kind of picks up on odors in general, which is exactly what we're trying to use these mm-hmm. things for, then when it's sitting in your pantry around all the other food, you know, and even from like manufacturing and shipping and all these things, like, I don't know, just a paper towel roll that like could fall on the ground and has all these other odors, to then put that in your mouth and use that as a scent sample doesn't seem like the clearest method.
Especially even if it's like your paper towel is sitting on your kitchen counter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems like it would...
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it could work.
I'm sure dogs are smart. You know, dogs figure things out. I think just making it a clear route for the dog.
Yeah.
They don't have to question what they're smelling.
I think it's one of those things where you can increase your chance of success mm-hmm. and the speed at which your dog learns and the ease at which they learn by just making sure it's a substance that's kind of designed for this and has been tested a little bit more.
Yeah. A little bit more on contamination. Whenever we're making our samples, being cautious of not grabbing it with your hands and putting it into the, you know, the pill baggie or mm-hmm. the poly...
Yeah, cylinder container.
The cylinder container. I mean, it's gross, but spitting it in there is
just spit it in
most
there.
Sanitary way to do it. So
absolutely.
And by sanitary, I mean not contaminating.
Yeah, like the cleanest.
The cleanest way where you don't get all the extra things. Because you have oils on your hand. You mm-hmm. have, like maybe if, no, never mind. I'm not going to say a maybe.
Yeah.
It's just better just to
spit it in there.
Spit it in there. Some people, I think, do use, like, specific tweezers for, like, transferring. Yes, but true. Even with the tweezers, this can't be tweezers that just lay in your bathroom
mm-hmm.
and are your tweezers for your eyebrows. Like, I would have it where it's, like, a tweezer that is specifically for your scent samples. And then you also store that in a container that is mm-hmm. doesn't have contamination in it.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And to add on to that, if you're going to use them, if you're going to use something like tweezers, this goes for anything that comes into contact with the scent sample, the best way to clean it is not with soap, because then that has a whole other odor. but you want to use alcohol, like rubbing alcohol, mm-hmm. not whiskey, rubbing alcohol.
Rubbing alcohol.
So I think what I use is 70% isopropyl alcohol, which is used in the majority of scent, basically studies for detection dogs to clean supplies and things. And it was actually going to sterilize it and evaporates, and you have to let it dry thoroughly, but that's actually going to be the best way to clean it. So that's what you would use for those tweezers that are not your eyebrow tweezers. But those tweezers that you use for scent samples, because you'll need to be cleaning them in between too.
Yeah.
But like Maggie said, the easiest way is really to just spit it in, and then you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And when you put a scent sample into a tin, I do the same thing. I just like dump it in.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to do everything I can to avoid touching it.
Yeah. Even if I don't have my tweezers, I'll like move the container mm-hmm. to get like, especially the dental roll, to like just like have it perfectly.
Exactly.
Like, contamination is a big issue, and mm-hmm. you can really train your dog to alert to the wrong thing. Dogs are smart and sometimes will be able to adapt, even if you're technically doing it incorrectly, but it's best just to, make it a clear, easy process for your pup.
Yep. And then real quick, collecting samples. So that's how we make them. And then as far as storing them, then the best way is to take those containers, so either that pill baggie or that polystyrene little cylinder container, put it in a glass mason jar, stick it in your freezer. The general rule is that they are good for 3 months in the freezer, 3 days in the fridge, and 3 hours at room temperature. This is, I would say, conservative, mm-hmm. if I'm being honest. It's a good rule to go by. If you're like, you know, it's 4 months in the freezer, that's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, 5 hours at room temp. Okay, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
It's probably still good. But those are the 3-3-3 rule is a good one to go by, just in case.
Yeah. You just don't want to... And also, it's good to also introduce your dog to new saliva sample.
Yes.
Samples. So almost that rule allows a... Mm. Avoids a different problem from arising. We're just using the same...
That's a good point.
Samples over and over again, so...
That's a good point. It helps them generalize if you are tossing them after 3 months.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
Awesome.
Cool.
So before we jump into the scent training process, how many scent samples do you recommend a person has before they start the scent training?
Yeah. I usually say 10 is the minimum to start with. 10 unique low blood sugar samples. And then all throughout your training, you're going to be wanting to continue collecting them. And you'll want to collect, mostly start with lows, but then pretty soon you'll want to do in range and highs so you can be ready for the next stages. But you want to at least have, I say 10 to start with. There are people that, you know, if you start with 5, as long as you're mixing them up, that's fine for, you know, the first week or so, as long as you're actively creating more. But what you don't want to do is train your dog on a total of 5 samples, because then your dog will be really good at alerting to those 5 samples.
Yeah.
And will not generalize to all low blood sugars.
Yes. Yeah. Dogs need a lot of generalizing. So generalizing is making sure that your dog is comfortable with no matter what scenario. Like even teaching a behavior, you want to generalize it to different rooms in your house and blah, blah, blah. Making sure that, I mean, how many scent samples do you think a dog should, like, go through in their lifetime? Because I really have never thought about the number. I was like, oh, yeah, we'll just do a lot, you know. But like,
that's a good question. I haven't thought about it either.
Research on like, a behavior, like a scent,
mm-hmm.
you should generalize it to, I think it's 8 to 10 different locations before your dog actually knows it.
Okay.
So I don't know. If,
interesting.
Like, odor is different because with... a range, if we're doing 80 and below of a blood sugar range, that's, do you have to do 10 of 79 and 10 of 78 and 10 of 76? I mean, that's that kind of is absurd, but.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. And what, oh yeah, that's actually a good question before we go on. What is your view on multiple different types of people, like multiple people creating samples for you, or do you use just one person that creates all the samples? What how do you like to do it?
I mean, well, I'm not a type 1 diabetic, so I am at the mercy of those around me. With Pickles, I had the luxury and assistance of I went to the University of Kentucky while I was training Pickles, and a student that has type 1, she was kind enough to make samples for me. So I got all the Pickles samples were from this one individual until I then found his person, Knox.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Pickles has a decent, you know, alert rate.
He's a great alert.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah, yeah. Decent. I'm saying he's not 100. Like, okay, Rooney over there.
Great.
But yeah, no, he's really, well, yeah, he's very much like a diabetic alert dog in the percentage range of like, yes, it was like in the 80s.
Yeah.
It was very good. So I don't know. I feel like if you're a type 1 diabetic, it'd be best just to use your own.
Yep.
And I think just to make it...
You might as well.
Because, like, I feel like Pickles probably had to do some problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice a difference between his reaction to Haley scent samples versus Knox, which is the boy that Pickles went to.
Yeah.
So I didn't notice a difference that he was, like, less inclined to alert accurately.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And then with... Yeah. I mean, with, like, Rooney, you probably used a bunch of different ones. Scout, we used a bunch of different ones. Mac... was different ones, you know, like it's, I don't know if it makes a difference. I wonder if it makes them better or makes them worse. I don't know.
That's I don't either. Question. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that, I haven't really looked into either. Mm. Like, does it help almost with that generalization piece? Because the dog knows that the common denominator is not the person's odor mm-hmm. and all those things within their body, you know, that makes Haley Haley, mm-hmm. the dog knows, oh, no, it's not about Haley. It's about the low blood sugar.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea. I have no evidence for any either way.
I mean, so. I mean, proofing behaviors. So, like, you know, making sure your dog can do a certain behavior under conditions that mm-hmm. are maybe not ideal. I mean, if you're proof of behavior, a scent sample from a different person, mm-hmm. maybe that would be a good thing. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Oh,
that's a good question. I don't know. Maybe I'll try to ask some people.
Yeah.
Or see if anyone's okay. thought about that.
We'll get back to you on that.
We'll get back to you on that. That's good. Because, yeah, generalizing is really, really important. A lot of times people are like, my dog, like, I'm a dog trainer. I deal with a lot of pet dogs and sport dogs. I have clients come in and are like, my dog knows how to sit. But just sometimes it's stubborn and doesn't want to do it. And I'm like, and most of the time they've only taught their dog to sit inside their living room.
At
and so, and, yeah, and, like, and then that's where it does it, and it does it whenever they yeah. pull out a cookie jar or a fruit bag, and like the dog does it there. And so, making sure we're generalizing is very mm-hmm. important because your dog will. I have clients. I tell them, if you're teaching your dog sit, you have to go to 10 different locations and teach sit. Yeah. Pretend that they have no idea what mm-hmm. sit is in each location, yeah. and then essentially reteach it.
Yeah,
and then which is a little bit of an extreme because dogs are. Not that terrible at generalizing, but they're yeah. still not great.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, if you tell a client to do that, they might go to four places yeah. and expect their dog to sit, and they will not be reteaching it, but they'll at least be practicing.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Honestly, yeah. As a dog trainer, we always have multiple reasons for asking a client to do things. But yes, generalizing is super, super important for our dogs with their scent sample ranges. Yeah. So definitely don't be shy about making as much as you can.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. We will move on to the actual scent training process. So for step one in the MD Dog's scent training book, the first step is to pair the scent with a reward. With that, I would like to talk about capturing, which is a dog training method.
Yeah.
Capturing is a method in which your dog offers a behavior at their own volition, and you mark and reward it. So if I am teaching my dog to sit, I want to use a capturing method to teach sit. I will put them on a leash. I will have my clicker ready or my marker word, which I use yes, and I wait for them to offer the sit. When they do it, I mark it, and then I reward the dog. Clients struggle with this because it requires patience and we don't have patience a lot as humans. If a dog doesn't respond to a person within 2 to 3 seconds, honestly, maybe even a second, they want to ask the dog again. Mm-hmm. They want to ask like, sit, 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 yep. sit. And so I want you, I'm using sit as an example because it's very visual. But this is the same process whenever we're using training our dog to work on recognizing the odor. So pairing the scent with the reward, we want our dogs to, we present them with a scent tin, so the metal tin that has the holes in it where your dog can get the odor from the scent sample. We want our dog to go up and investigate the tin. So we want to capture that behavior. Whenever we present the tin, I don't want it to be we're shoving the tin in the dog's nose. I want the dog to be able to come to the tin just a smidge. It doesn't even have to be far. It can be an inch. You know, it doesn't have to. But I don't want us to, like, put the tin to their nose and then mark it and then reward it. We want to have a little bit more action on their part.
Yeah.
Are you agreeing with everything I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Just making sure. Yeah. We want the dog to take action.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the handler and the trainer to be the one that causes the dog's, like, nose to be near the scent tin, right?
Yeah, we want the dog to. So I want to capture the specific behavior of the dog just investigating the tin in any way possible.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be them actually sniffing it. It doesn't have to be. I want them to have interest in the tin because dogs' noses are amazing. They are 20 million billion times better than us. Their nose has the ability to. They see their life with their nose. They do not see their life with their eyes. It's they They just see it in a way we can't even really understand. Mm-hmm. So a dog getting close to a scentin is them actually getting close to odor, mm-hmm. not actually the scentin.
Yeah.
So it's going to be that process for them. So we want to think about capturing them investigating the ten. So we wait for them to offer it.
Mm-hmm.
I typically present the ten. Usually the dogs want to investigate very easily the first time you present it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, usually there's a treat probably in his hand or something. There's something going on. You can mark it as soon as they put their nose to it. And then you reward them. I typically keep my clicker and my treats in the opposite hand of the ten. So you mm-hmm. want to have the ten in a separate hand. All the other stuff in your other hand.
Yeah.
If the dog doesn't immediately investigate it, I don't want you to, you don't want to talk to them. I want mm-hmm. them to be like in capturing. You really want to quietly and patiently wait for them to offer behaviors. So I just sit there and I wait. I count to 10 usually. And if the dog hasn't investigated it by then, I actually remove the 10 and stand up away from them. And then I present it again. And usually they have the ability to come back to it. But that 10-second rule, I find, allows the dog the opportunity to problem solve on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it allows me to actually capture the behavior rather than kind of pestering them about putting their nose near the 10. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really, really hard for people. Because even like if you think about like traditional dog training, like even like in the media, people view it as like commands, right? We mm-hmm. even use that terminology if we're commanding the dog to do something. And that is not how this works in the slightest. This is really about letting the dog do a natural behavior and we reinforce it so it happens more often. Mm-hmm. And we do that in a way where we are shaping a behavior that we want to go towards our end goal. And so that's where it's so important, where we just like present that scentin and then the dog chooses to, you know, check it out, and we say, great job, here's a cookie. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, okay, I'll do that again.
Yeah.
Cool, a cookie showed up last time.
Right, I went near this thing, I went near this odor, and then I got a cookie. This is awesome. That's,
But what we're not doing is saying, sniff this, touch it, do it, do it, do it. How about now? Why aren't you doing it, right? Because, they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
We're literally teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't tell them what to do because they don't know what that means yet. They don't speak English.
Yes, yeah, no, they don't. Dogs are smarter than we give credit for. Mm-hmm. So we have a dog that, you know, they can become a diabetic alert dog. They can do all the things. We need to give them a little bit of a chance to show how they can independently think.
Mm-hmm.
Independence is a very important part of diabetic alert dog training. They have to independently decide on alerting to a behavior. So this is even a good foundational skill of just independence and them mm-hmm. thinking problem solving on their own, which is a big thing.
Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing with diabetic alert dog training is it has to be completely independent, unlike other things. So if you think about, you know, it's not necessarily great training methods, but if you want a dog to sit, like in the olden days, people would just push down on their dog's rear end, mm-hmm. pull up on its collar, and then physically the dog is going to sit. Mm-hmm. And then you can, if you want to be nice trainer back then, you can then give your dog a pat on the head or a scratch. and eventually the dogs learn to sit. But you can't force a dog to sniff an odor and respond to it in that same way.
Yeah, because we're not prompting them to alert to our lows.
Yeah.
Because then that's not...
Exactly.
Then there's no point in having a diabetic alert dog because you already know you're low.
Exactly.
And then,
So we can't force it. We can't prompt it. So it really has to be something that they learn to do completely independently and that they have an insane amount of drive and enthusiasm to do so that they'll wake up from that cozy bed and come over and alert you to it.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that literally starts with this step one, like Maggie, like you're talking about, of where you present it, you have the choice to, you know, check it out. And if not, I bring it back up, then I present it again.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, the dog learns, hey, every time she presents it, I go check it out, cookie appears.
Yep. Yeah.
Like it's really not complicated.
Yeah. I think we overcomplicate things because mm-hmm. we're so excited, especially step one. Everyone's like really gung ho about this. They're mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, I get to center my diabetic alert dog. This is going to make things so much easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have to have independence. We have to have problem solving and all that stuff. Anything else to add to do that step?
No, I think that's great. Basically, we're not asking for much.
Yeah.
Just that they kind of show an interest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think rep-wise, does your book, is it 20 times of just Sounds right.
Yeah, sounds right. Because how you have your steps laid out is very like baby steps.
Yeah.
Like, so step one is just pairing the scent with the scent smell with the reward. Mm-hmm. But then your step two is actually sniffing the sample. So we didn't even care about sniffing at all with step one.
Yeah.
It's really just about investigating the odor, which as a human is investigating the 10.
Yeah.
with the sniffing of the sample, a lot of times people want to see a very obvious reaction from the dog of like, oh, they're flaring their nose or they're doing these things. But like I mentioned before, dogs just see things as odor anyways.
Yep.
And so they will be sniffing it. So even in step one, technically they're going to also be still getting that information that they're also, we're going to be working on this step two. Essentially, they are smelling it if they're near it. If you see a nose flare, even better.
Great.
But it's not required at all.
Yep.
So reading your dog and recognizing, like, oh, they're showing an interest in this 10 is usually inclination enough to know that they're interested in the odor.
Yep. Yep. Agreed. And then for that, the things that we look out for that we don't want to reward is like obsessive licking, because we don't want it to become something that they think that that is the behavior, is to lick. And then same thing with pawing. Even if you want the dog to have a paw alert later, if they're doing it at this stage, you don't want to reward that yet.
Yeah.
You just want them to show, like, put their nose near the odor, because then they are sniffing it. But if they're just kind of whacking it with their paw left and right, then they don't, they're just kind of playing around offering behaviors and they don't understand what, what the goal is.
Yeah. Do you find, would, and this, I'm assuming that you wouldn't be like, this is like an ultimatum of it. Like if a dog offers a paw, I think it's kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
At least from my recent, so I teach barn hunt, which is a scent-based sport, on rat odor, but you can Google that on your own time. The dogs usually have a paw alert on a tube. So I have some dogs that come in are like, hey, there's a rat in there. I want to murder it. So I'm going to theoretically paw. So there's a lot of dogs with prey drive in this sport. And so I will kind of have a ratio of wanting them to actually, I will mark and reward the smelling, but I also will reward the pawing. But I try to focus on, in the beginning, I focus on rewarding the smelling more. But it's kind of like a balance. Because I especially with barn hunts, it's different because it's prey drive. And so I do want to kind of have a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, when there's no prey drive towards, obviously, our saliva.
So
I kind of have like a, I think with Pickles, I did it where I rewarded probably of like, if 10 reps, if he sniffed it, I'll reward like 8 sniffing and then like 2 pawing in this process. If they're going ahead of the curve of you know, go to the next step, and then I'll do that.
Well, I think like that's exactly what I do for step 3, where we ask for a paw. Because what we find a lot of the times is, even if we do step 2 where they're sniffing the sample, they're doing great, then we move to step 3 where we ask them to sniff the sample and paw. They sniff it, they get frustrated, they paw it. We're like, yes, that's exactly what we want. We've captured that paw. Great. After like a couple reps, the dog's like, oh, I just need to paw it. And then they're not sniffing whatsoever. And so then that's exactly when I do that ratio of like, hey, I need you to sniff and I need you to paw.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, if sometimes they only sniff, I'll still reward that, because I'm like, I want you to like have your nose near it. Like, this isn't just about pawing it randomly. So yeah, I think ratios come into play a lot here.
But you would say even for step 2, like, it needs to be just sniffing at this point.
For, like, 5 to 10 reps.
Okay.
If they sniff with their paw, that's fair game.
That's true. Yeah. Because some will do it where they're, like, paw and...
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But if then they just, like, whack it without, like, paying attention to the odor, I don't want to teach them accidentally...
This is whack-a-game.
Paw. Yeah. It's whack-a-tin.
Whack-a-tin. Yeah.
You're now not a diabetic alert dog.
Yeah.
You're a whack-a-tin dog.
Right. That's funny.
So, like, I'll try and get a couple reps of just the nose. And then if they're pawing quickly, then I also often use that as an indication of, okay, you're going to be a dog who wants to use your paw to alert.
Yeah.
So let's move on to step 3 and then work on that ratio of sniff, paw, making sure we're kind of getting both most of the time. And then if they already have an inclination to do that.
Yeah. Then, and a lot of dogs do cruise right on through like that.
Yeah, some dogs are really into their paws.
Yeah.
So there's just, yeah. It's, I mean, the work is great.
Yeah, it's great. So a lot of people I found, like, those first three steps, sometimes they're like, oh, yeah, I got that done in, like, 2 days, which is fantastic. Like, mm-hmm. wonderful. Mm-hmm. Don't think that your dog's almost fully trained, though.
Yes.
Just because there's only 14 steps and you're on three does not mean that you're, like, 3/14 of the way there.
No, yeah, because all your other steps in the end are very...
They start to take a while.
Yeah, they start to take a while. Yeah. Cause, yeah. And I would say... In the process of pairing scent with a reward or sniffing samples, like step one and two, mm-hmm. In my head, I somewhat combine them.
Yeah.
I do a lot more than the 20.
Yeah.
I've started just to like make sure, be like, uh-huh. hey, like, yep. And I'll even do it even once they're past certain levels of scent training, like, yep. If I'm like, hey, like, we just did a little refresher course, or mm-hmm. I want to make sure that you're okay with this like new odor or stuff like that,
totally
a new Lowe's, I'll kind of go back and forth, like, mm-hmm. I realize I frequently go back to step two a lot,
yeah,
of just making sure the odor, especially if I'm introducing a new scent sample or something, mm-hmm. It's not like every time, it's just kind of if I'm like, oh, I could probably, you know, check this off of just being a little bit stronger or just clarifying, or like clarifying for my own brain.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you can never do it too much.
Yeah, you really can't.
And one of the things that in the new MD Dogs instructions that will, I don't know, maybe eventually come out, is I would like to put in there kind of this differentiation of like 20 reps for each, but then like go do it again, but with brand new samples. Because what isn't included in there, like I say at the beginning to switch up your samples, but as I go through the steps, we don't say, make sure you've used three different samples on this step.
That's true. Oh, that is true.
And so if, you know, you get step one through three done in 2 days, well, how many samples have you really used during that time? Probably like two, mm-hmm. Maybe even one. And so then while your dog has the behavior that we're looking for on paper, the dog doesn't have a full understanding, as we've already discussed. Generalization is so important.
Yeah.
The dog has not generalized because you haven't literally had the time mm-hmm. to generalize them to 10 different scent samples. Yeah. So that's more of a mental note to self. That I need to put that in there that I had not thought about until approximately.
Right now.
Okay. Yeah, right now. So yeah, you can't do it too much.
Yeah, you can't do it too much. Yeah. No, because I realize I currently have double mm-hmm. MD dogs. Cutie little patootie, blue roan English Cocker Spaniel that's hanging out with me. I realize I've probably done, I don't know, 100 mm-hmm. step 1/step 2 with every different, I think you gave me 10 scent samples, and I've done at least like 10s or so reps with each okay. sample, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
And just making sure that, like, oh yeah, he knows all these different mm-hmm. odors and getting comfortable with that.
Yeah. More is better.
More is better. More is better. Yeah, just do more. The foundation, so as a dog trainer, everything that I teach clients is do the foundations.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I was a baby trainer and I wanted to train a dog to do a cool trick, I would think too much about the big trick.
Yeah.
And not the little stuff. So like pickles, pickles is a diabetic dog. I like teaching dogs tricks for relationship building and just problem solving on the dog's part and everything. Mm-hmm. And I wanted him to do a foot stall. So a foot stall is where like I would lay on my back, feet in the air, and have him jump on top of the soles of my shoes. Okay. I was just like, okay, he can jump up on things. Like, let's just try it. Obviously, it did not go well. I had to go back to him understanding every single paw and how each paw has, like, different. He has control over each paw and how to move them mm-hmm. and to get them to scrunch further and farther to get that trick.
Yeah.
That was, like, the foundation was the entire trick mm-hmm. and not just the actual trick.
Yeah.
So whenever you're teaching this with your dog and you're wanting a dog that alerts out in public and does all these things, you have to remember that they have to go back to where it is. They're literally have so much like confidence mm-hmm. and so much history of just even the odor.
Yep.
Is very, very important mm-hmm. As the foundation skills. And then, you know, obviously learning is also a part of the foundation skills. But I find the odor is obviously like step one. Like they have to yep. love, they have to love the odor.
They do.
They have to think it's the most amazing thing in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
Like act like your dog invented a cure for cancer. They invented a cure for type 1 diabetes. Yep. Like I just, they act like they were a rocket scientist. Like whenever mm-hmm. they're doing this, because they have to love it.
Yeah.
And so, don't shy away from mm-hmm. helping them love it even more. Cause if yep. they're not acting like it's the most amazing thing in the entire world, whenever you bring out a scent sample, it is yep. not conditioned enough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good point. The enthusiasm you have and praise you incorporate during these foundational steps is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Even though your dog is not actively alerting to your low blood sugars, they are indeed just responding by sniffing saliva on cotton.
Mm-hmm.
It is the foundation of what is going to be exciting. And so you need to be just as excited for them when they do each of those reps. Also, we were underestimating ourselves. Turns out step two, we do recommend 100 repetitions. So.
Okay, cool. I'm thinking step one is 20.
Yeah, I think step one is 20, okay. which I thought too. But anyway, so step one is 20, step two is 100, and step three is 50.
Okay, there you go. See, look at us.
Yeah.
Look at us.
We actually do know what we're talking about.
We're like, the book says differently.
But we're second-guessing ourselves.
We're literally doing it right.
Turns out, though, we agree with ourselves. We agree with ourselves. So that's good.
That's better. I guess, yeah, the only thing changing is the 100 reps of the sniffing the sample is with different odors each.
Generalizing.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome.
But yeah, some more.
We're good. We got this. We know how to train dogs.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. We train dogs here. Awesome. That's all I have.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first three. I think that'll get you a really solid foundation. Just takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, as we mentioned, more reps are better. More samples are better. It's one of those things where you really just, you can't rush it. And you don't want to, because you want that super solid foundation, because that will make everything else so much easier.
Yeah.
And I think in a future podcast, we'll go through the next couple batches of steps, but yeah. I think this is a great start.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Well, first, what is new with MD Dogs and what's going on?
Oh, what is going on? Let's see.
B chip. Double.
Yeah, we have do we want to go through them all?
Or at least B. Okay. Because B's available now.
B is available now. Yep. So B is our working line English Cocker who we bred. And so it came from Birdie. And she was imprinted and raised with us and is now being placed as a fully trained diabetic alert dog. Currently available. She's not matched yet. So trying to find that perfect person who wants a sport dog who also is a diabetic alert dog, because she is a very sporty little thing.
She is sporty.
But yeah, we're looking forward to seeing where she goes. And then Chip was just matched with a badass 80-year-old man, as somebody called him. So he's going to move down to Georgia and learn to go fishing and dove hunting.
Oh. Chip's going to love it. He's going to go hang out on a boat.
He's going to have a great life.
Yeah, right.
And then alert to low blood sugar along right. the way.
Yeah, he's like, this is going to be great.
Yeah.
And Bee's a cool little dog. I love Bee. Bee's like the perfect, she's just, you can't not be happy about her. Like, she's
it
just,
is true.
She's just so happy. She wants to do everything with you. Oh, she gives really good cuddles. Like
hardcore cuddles.
Yeah, she's a very good girl. I mean, she'll need someone that's like ready to like have a sidekick that's like
all the time
a really 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 good sidekick, but like a really just like over excited like just game for anything.
Yeah,
so
yeah, anything you want to do, she is down for. So yep, so that's the main updates. And then we have puppies coming. Yeah, puppies. I think the end of March. Mm-hmm. As long as everything continues to go according to plan, mm-hmm. we'll have some more scent imprinted puppies. That's coming exciting. Up yeah.
Yeah, Birdie looks so preggo.
She does.
She's very pregnant. Awesome. Okay. Well, that's all we have for you guys. And we'll continue working on putting together a podcast for the next few steps.
Yeah.
So that we can just kind of keep rolling through it.
Yep. So that sounds great. And before we go, final plug is the free MD Dogs Facebook group called MD Dogs Training Community. Feel free to join that and ask any questions as well. So if you have ideas for what you want us to talk about on a podcast, just put a post in there. Yeah. And we'll combine everything and make sure to include it in the coming weeks.
Yes. Yeah. Please do. Because we're just winging it here. We assume we look through stuff of people's questions, but that'll make our lives easier and also give you guys what you want.
Yeah. More helpful for you all.
Awesome. Okay.
All right. Till next time.
Toodles.
Bye.
All better.